This is Justin Meeklem of Stockhouse Media, and today I am interviewing Colin Fisher, president of Stableview Asset Management. So Colin, as a fund manager, you're making decisions on behalf of other investors. How would you describe your investment focus and philosophy?
Look, we run a multi-strategy, multi-direction fund, but we have a primary bent towards technology. We have a strong bent towards technology, and we're active with our companies, including building and constructing boards of directors and helping place management or helping with management if and when needed. We're not a passive. I mean, we're very distinctly different in that we're not passive like most investors.
Sure. So can you give me an example, like with real-world companies and on how that...
VersaPay would be a good example. We helped get Mark Mesher on the board of directors. We recently helped get Sheldon Pollack and Mark Kohler. We cleaned up, and I, was specific in getting rid of Jason Grandiano off the board previously, and had continually pushed the board towards adopting more relevant people, including Tim Stanley previous to this. So, that's a real-world example. And without a measure on that board, the company would be nowhere near the worth it is today.
And so when you initially looked at VersaPay, what made you want to get active with it? What was it about VersaPay that you liked?
So it was a couple of things. Well, with VersaPay, it was interesting. I actually, I call it stalking the company. I'll watch a company for a very long time. So I actually watched VersaPay for almost 4 years. And they kept saying that they were this, accounts receivable technology company, and they were going to do all this stuff. But their CEO was a payment processing guy. Their board of directors were all payment processing people. And so it's hard for someone to say, hey, listen, I'm a vegetarian, when they're, hucking into a chunk of steak every day. So, what they wanted to be was a, a technology play, but they had none of the underpinnings of management nor board of directors nor business model that sort of alluded to the fact that where they were going to be. When they finally made the move and they got Craig O'Neill on board. Now, Craig O'Neill was a technology, so, there's different types of CEOs, and what they needed and what they got with Craig O'Neill was a product CEO, a guy who knew how to build a product. And so when they got him, that's when I actually stepped in, but the board of directors immediately were making noises of being not the right board of directors for a leaning forward technology company. I mean, normally you need a board of directors that is leaning forward, they understand what they're doing, they're helping business with strategy, they're helping build out business cases, they're pushing back and forth. With this, it was, not that anyone was bad per se, it's just they were built incorrect, there was a wrong board. We had a former Premier of Ontario. We had David Peterson, super smart guy, bright guy, great for compliance and whatnot, but that's not the primary goal of a fast-growing tech startup. Compliance isn't the primary role. It's obviously super critically important that you have fiduciary responsibility and all of that, but you also need people to understand the strategy and how to go to market and how to build the technology and what are the things that we need to do and what's a responsible burn while you're growing this thing. So, immediately, and they had an absentee landlord in terms of the former chairman prior to Art, and he was really slowing down the process. And, this was a company that needed to move fast. So, I went to bat against the chairman to get rid of him. I went to bat to get Art on the board, and, after that. But it was because the board was making noises of, like, a Fortune 100. Oh, let's not get too far over our skis. Let's not do this. Let's not do that. It should be, how do we do this? How do we do that? What's the best method of doing this? Like, not leaning back, leaning forward. So it gave me no choice but to start to go, look, I have to go in and start agitating against this board.
Looking at your different funds that you are managing, what percentage of the companies there would you categorize as fast-growing tech startups?
Um, Probably around 40%.
Mm-hmm. And what would the balance be?
Well, we have special situations, you know, so, and it really depends, right? You know, because I come in and out of some of these companies, right? So when I'm repositioning them, you know, like, so we have, like, Terra Firma as an example, right? Like, that's a real estate play, but it's, you know, a deep value, misaligned company that people just don't understand. And when you're on the Canadian stock market under $100 million, the misallocations or the mispricings can be like unbelievably big, right? So for me, I look at that company, I go, well, this is a, you know, a very serious management team. You know, you've got Glenn Watchorn, who left Tricon Capital. He was the co-COO. So when you have a company like that, where you have a guy who left a $1.4 billion company to come down to a $40 million company, and you have Great Gulf Homes that just bought in at 8%, you have, you know, Kaplan as the chairman, who's from Runnymede Development, and you have, and remember, Great Gulf Home is coming in. They're one of the biggest developers in Canada. They're, you know, I don't know their exact number, but, you know, one of the top developers down in the States. You know, there's a, that's just a big misallocation. And then, you know, we were in Acuity Ads from very, very, very early days. We trimmed a massive portion of our position when it was up at 4.95. We just thought we'd be able to retrap it. But I was thinking more in the threes. We've been able to retrap it, you know, in around a dollar. So, you know, we've been, so when you get big positions that come out, if you'd ask me a couple of, I mean, it can vary, right? I mean, we're at 30 now. We can go as high, you know, I've gone as high as probably 60% into that space. But that's more from growth, not as a function of book value.
Yeah. Looking at what's going on, you know, macro picture and trends, when you talk about repositioning, where do you suspect that you may be getting, you know, a bit better?
So it's funny, I've just been going through, been meeting with all our clients just to sort of, this is the pilot speaking, we've got some turbulence coming up ahead, kind of conversations with our clients. And there's three key things that I'm concerned about. Everything else I don't really give that much of a rat's ass about, but the two primary drivers to the market, to the economy right now are interest rates going up and inflation.
Mm-hmm.
And so anything that is in interest rate sensitive, so companies with dividends, like low growth dividend companies. So for example, we own Texas, TCS. You know, that's a relatively fast growing technology company, but they pay a dividend, right? So in those type of instances, and they've grown their dividend consistently, so those will be interest rate insensitive, right? So if interest rates go up, they'll have some noise around it, but typically the market recorrection goes, oh, that's a dividend growing company, therefore their sensitivity to interest rates rising is less. And therefore, that's a type of company that I would be owning if I want to have a dividend-paying company. It has to have a growth story behind it. So I think interest rate and inflation, if you have long-dated treasuries or, like, if you look at XDV, which is the ETF, it's getting its head handed to it right now because a lot of those companies in there don't necessarily have a massive growth pattern behind their dividends. So there has to be a compelling growth of the company. And then there has to be, with that compelling growth, there has to be discipline that they're going to consistently increase their dividend as a function of the growth. So you have that in a company like Texas. You don't necessarily have that in a lot of other companies. So if you're looking for dividends, so the sensitivity, typically if you own an interest-paying company, they're going to have some sensitivity if interest rates go up. You know, one of the reasons I like Terra Firma in that same context is they don't pay a dividend. So they're not typically being held by people who are looking at holding dividend paying companies. So I have a real estate special situation that's insensitive or less sensitive to interest rates backing up. So the third thing that I'm looking at, like, so you have your inflation, you have your interest, is the third one is the trade wars. So I've moved one of the things I like about a lot of technology companies is that they're moving either services or bits or capital across borders. They're not moving parts. And so if there is a trade war and people want to put a hatchet to the integrated supply chain of the entire globe, then there's going to be a problem for those companies that are part of that integrated supply chain, which is dependent on tariffs being low and free trade arrangements. And so I've moved almost my entire portfolio out of anything that has a hard asset, like a physical thing that moves across a border. You know, let's take programmatic. Let's take Acuity as one of the reasons I like from a macro perspective. About Acuity Ads is that you have a really smart management team. They actually are, a lot of people don't really realize it, the primary reason I actually like Acuity Ads isn't because of the industry they're in, it's because of what their underlying technology is. Their underlying technology is artificial intelligence, and they're one of the sort of premier platforms that's done machine learning and has been tested and commercialized to a level that most people haven't done. There's a ton of AI companies out there. They just did... If Acuity Ads wasn't doing programmatic, they'd be bought at way bigger multiples. Just that they happen to be using their machine learning platform for programmatic advertising. What I like about them in that space is that this is a company that is going around and acquiring businesses at pennies on the dollars, because there was at one point thematically within the VC community a massive spend on programmatic advertising or technologies that were in the programmatic advertising space. And or if you want to, I shouldn't say programmatic, but online advertising writ large. And so one of the problems you run into is not a problem for those guys, not for us, is that, you know, you get all this money running into this space and you have tons of dough going in and there's massive amounts of competition, but not all of them are going to survive. And with VCs, their MO is, you know, if you're not the billion-dollar unicorn, you know, you're the redheaded stepchild, and they want to jettison them as quickly as they can. And so when you have a company like Acuity Ads, they're able to go into a lot of these companies that are either losing money or marginally on the cusp of making money, and they can pull out the whole tech stack and increase the value of that acquisition overnight. And, you know, having management like Sheldon Pollack on the board of directors who has done acquisitions like that, and you have amazing management of Tal and Dr. Nathan McCoos and Joe Ottman, all those group, you know, that group is just amazingly disciplined and sticking in their lanes and doing their business. And so I look at that company, I go from it. So if there's a macro industry I look at, it's like, where has money been blown up and where can deals be done at pennies on the dollar? Because people are leaving that space. But it doesn't mean that the space writ large isn't growing. Like, you think about the early days of, you know, the internet, how much money got overspent, the whole sector implodes, but out of that come all the biggest companies, Amazon as an example.
Mm-hmm. On that, yeah, sorry to interrupt. I was going to say, just, but on that point, I suspect that you did not get involved in the little macro wave of blockchain.
Oh my God, I guess.
But as a foundation, when you talk about the internet, what are your thoughts there for how it might be affecting?
So listen, the blockchain, I think, is going to be a, you know, this is a seminal event, I think, in technology. I think these are very important things. Now, let's be clear. Distributed ledgers exist already. They've existed for decades. The blockchain component is very interesting and very powerful. But, you know, a lot of people, you know, talk about Moore's Law and all these other laws. The law I think is most underutilized is O'Mara's Law, which states we overestimate technology in the short run and we underestimate it in the long run. And so these ideas of these, and also, I don't know if you were in my tech event last year, but, you know, I had, the reason I built a crypto miner for the event was, you know, it was part of my research. I was really going, okay, what are the actual numbers on this thing? How does this thing actually work? Because you can theorize until you're blue in the face, but until you actually build one of these things and see how it actually operates and what are the costs and what are the decline rates and what's happening in the actual community and yada, 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 you don't really understand how mining works. So, you know, I have a crypto miner in my office. It's off right now because it increases the temperature of the building, our office, by like 7 to 10 degrees. It's unbelievably hot. But, you know, I think a lot of these mining things, people say, no, we're going to be the backbone of this and backbone of that. The problem is that, you know, if proof of stake comes in, well, there goes all the mining needs, or a lot of the mining needs, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and then there's also terms like proof of authority, and there's all these proof techniques are coming out, and none of them have been implemented yet, but they will, and they'll have material impacts. And so, you know, there's a concept of, you know, disruption versus chaos, right? And so if you bet on a bunch of I'm trying to use a slightly less graphic explanation as to what I'm trying to say, but you know, if you have a whole bunch of wrestlers in a cage match, and the whole bunch of guys are all 5'8", and you have some guy who's 12 foot and 750 pounds, that's disruption. If they're all the exact same height and shape, and you bet on, like, who do you bet on?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, that's chaos. Who the hell's coming out of this thing? I don't know. It's totally random. And so, a lot of what's happening in this blockchain space is going to be, it's a totally chaotic environment. It's almost impossible. Will the technology survive? That, I believe, yes. Are there applications that are being used right now? Absolutely. Most of the blockchain stuff that's being used. And a lot of people just don't understand that, you know, a coin or a token is a feature of a blockchain. Right? And everyone says, oh, the blockchain's super unhackable. Well, that may be the case, but all the stuff around it, all the wallets have been hacked left, right, and center. So it's a bit like having this huge titanium-linked chain, and you take, cellotape, and you tape diamonds to the thing. Well, you know, it's not that difficult to pull it off. Like, Steve Wozniak had a whole bunch of his Bitcoin stolen because he sold the Bitcoin, but someone used a credit card, and it turned out the credit card was fraudulent, and so they reversed the charges, and so he didn't get any of his dough, but the guy's got his Bitcoin. Like, a lot of people don't understand it's the ancillary technology. And there's a huge number of layers of complexity. I mean, 99% of people don't even know what a wallet is. I was at that dinner with you when I said, do you have a wallet? And all those people said, I got a wallet. I go, no, you have an account with an exchange, not a wallet.
So as a fundamental investor, are you playing on the side you're crypto mining? Are you speculating at all on cryptocurrencies?
No.
No.
I mean, not on a professional level. I mean, I'm doing it at a, like, am I doing it for research purposes and looking at this and that and the other? I told everyone ahead of time that these exchanges, there's going to be a massive amount of fraud. And we're seeing it already. This reminds me of the early days of the Forex exchanges, where you didn't know who was on the counterparty. There was no market depth. There was no clarity. And now we're seeing it. They're saying, oh, there's massive manipulation. Oh, surprise, surprise. Because there's, you don't know if those volumes are real. Like, it could literally be a show. It could be a puppet show. And then it becomes real enough, and then people say, oh, I'm going to start doing this. But it's not like a normal exchange. These things are like, they control the left hand and the right side. You don't know what they're showing you is the same as showing somebody else. But I feel damn certain that if I go to one Bloomberg terminal or Reuters terminal or Thomson, whatever, if I see the price quote, it's going to be exactly as a set price quote on my terminal.
Yeah, no, I just
right. And so, you know, but that's what people don't get is, like, you know, that they you have to really get into the mechanics of these exchanges, and there's less than zero clarity. And so I think, though, I believe those numbers, like, not at all.
Yeah, that's scary. You mentioned your event. What is the Stableview event? So how does it work?
Well, I mean, we've been doing it since 2014 now. I don't know if I'm smart or an idiot, but we're trying to help build the tech community in Canada, and particularly around capital going into funding our Canadian companies. And so I think last year was our fourth or fifth. I think this is our fourth or fifth year, I can't remember now. Next year will be our fifth year. So this last year was our fourth. So, you know, we're doing this this event because, you know, we're trying to help raise awareness of tech companies and help educate the Canadian capital markets. Because writ large, most of the people in Canada are generalists. We haven't had a really big technological or tech sort of push into the capital market space for a while. And because of that, I think we get a lot of some of the shenanigans that are going on around technology. People say blockchain and the stock goes up, you know, some crazy amount of money, but they don't understand what it is or what its applications are. And so we've had this event going on last year. I think we had a little over 350 people at the event. We had about 300 and somewhat billion dollars in the crowd. We have some really, we invite all our quote unquote competitors. So portfolio managers from across Canada, everything from VCs up to pension plans and mutual fund managers. And the goal is really to, and so anybody who wants to come, it's an invitation only, so you can apply to attend. Go to our website and stableview.ca and you can sign up. There's an event link there, and then we approve whomever. And, you know, we're going to have, it's bigger this year. So last year, I think we had 30 companies present. This year, we're going to have, or sorry, I think we had 25 this year, 30 present, and then we're having 40 companies in attendance. So we're going to have 70 companies at the event. And the goal is really just to educate the capital markets and investors so they can see, and we curate all the companies. So whether or not they're successful is not going to be the primary. It's, are they a real company? Are they real management? Is it a real business? Is it real tech? Those are what we're going to vet for. And, you know, we're not here to, and we don't, you know, a lot of things, is, a lot of people ask is whether we just have companies that we have invested in. I think we've never had more than 25% of an event be our own companies that we've invested in. So we have privates there and public companies, everything from smaller companies to fairly significant size companies as well. So yeah, it's an event, and we really want to encourage anyone from across Canada who wants to see some of the more interesting technology that you probably won't have had a chance to see, because it's not just coming through the investment bankers. A lot of these are coming through the VCs or the, you know, some of our private equity channels. And so there's some really, really interesting companies, and they're all Canadian.
Yeah, interesting. What is the date of the 2018 show?
This is October 4th this year.
Okay, perfect. We may have about 10,000 retail investors listening to this interview. What would your parting words to that big ball of retail be?
Well, I think it's like anything. I think there's always an element of applies. Physics doesn't change in technology. Right? Like, things go up, things go down. There has to be some reality to, or some visible measure of the normal numbers working, right? Like, early stages of a company is very tough to analyze, right? So, you know, you can't, like, if there's no E, you know, no earnings, then price to earnings is a tough one. So you have to start looking at other metrics. You know, a little side note is price to sales came out in the 2000 dot bomb. By the way, a buddy of mine is calling the cannabis sector the dot bomb. The issues are, is you have to look at what are things that are relevant. So, because a lot of companies I look at are, a lot of them they're not profitable yet, right? So they're spending to maintain, to increase growth, or they're doing R&D, or they're capturing greater market share. You know, I think a lot of people just don't realize is that, you know, if you're 700 times revenue, maybe that's fine. Maybe it's 700 times revenue and it's a very, very low number, and the chances of them tripling or quadrupling their revenue isn't so bad. And so maybe you go down to, I don't know what that would be, like a couple hundred times revenue, and you can see that doubling or tripling again in the next little period of time. So maybe it comes down to, but there has to be some sort of path to it getting into the realm of normal, right? And the other thing you have to really look at, I think the other problem is that there's a real misapplication of the capital market structure strategies from oil, gas, and mining in Canada to tech companies. And so, like, a lot of people apply warrants to tech companies. And this is just wrongheaded. There really should be no warrants on an equity financing in technology. I push against them all the time. One of the reasons is that when you have like a junior oil or gas mining, you have basically a spending plan, right? So this spending plan says, okay, I can spend X amount of dollar, and then eventually I run out of money. But it's a spending plan, so it's much more null. It's much more controllable. And when an oil and gas or mining company has a find, it's a balance sheet find, right? So they've gone from zero, they have no oil, no gas, no nickel, copper, gold, whatever, to now having something. And that goes against their balance sheet. So their balance sheet goes up. And in Canada, a lot of people will bid for the balance sheet, right? So they'll go, that's it, and there's competition to get that asset. Whereas in the tech space, if you are growing materially faster than your gross margin, then you consume cash. And so because of that, if you have a warrant overhanging, you don't necessarily know when the warrant's going to expire, when your capital needs. So if you have success, you actually have greater consumption of your cash, and that reduces your cash, which means you're going to have to raise money, and you're already going to have that shelf in place, or the ceiling, I should say, in place from the warrants. So capital structure, I think, is one of the most misunderstood things when it comes to technology companies, more than any other. In oil and gas and mining, if they find some oil or gas or whatever, it's such a binary event on the balance sheet that people will pay for that the warrants become meaningless. But in a real business with cash coming in and cash going out and costs and gross margins, it's a vastly different trade. And I think what happens is there's too much cross-use of the methodologies that we use to value early-stage oil, gas, and mining companies over to technology. And I cannot say firmly enough that there is zero methodology similarity. There should be zero. And so that's probably the one thing, is you really have to watch that your management teams, as much as possible, are really not using warrants in a really frivolous way.
Interesting. Yeah, thank you so much, Colin.
Yeah.
Today we've been speaking with Colin Fisher, Portfolio Manager and President of StableView Asset Management. Thank you so much for your time. Continued success in the market, Colin.
Thanks, dude.
On behalf of Stockhouse Media, thank you again to Colin Fisher of StableView Asset Management.